Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me, as always, is my colleague, Joe Healy. And we are going guestless on this December 10th edition of the show. We are in full prospect handbook mode over at Baseball America. Joe and I are slipping out to do a podcast for you all to talk some college baseball. We're going to talk about teams that might be bounce back candidates for the 2022 season. Joe wrote about that subject a little bit earlier this fall. We never got into it on the podcast, and genuinely, I don't think either Joe or I remembers why that happened, but it is a good topic to get into now, especially with schools getting into the finals break. And you know, before you know it, we'll have to be out here making preseason top 25s official and all the rest of it. So we're going to dive into some schools that might have had down 2021, but could rebound here in the 2022 season. So that's the plan today on the Baseball America College Podcast, which is presented by Rapsodo. Rapsodo has become the industry standard in player performance data. Coaches use Rapsodo data as a measuring stick for player development and evaluation. The Rapsodo National Player Database is a free service that allows you to see how you stack up against your peers and provides a pathway to get discovered by scouts. You can check out the Rapsodo National Player Database at rapsodo.com/national-database. All right, Joe, I said there that we were in full prospect handbook mode, and really that was I was in full prospect handbook mode racing to get the Guardians chapter done. Joe, of course, got his work in much earlier. I was the one that was pushing deadline pretty hard this year.
Well, it's I got my chapter in a little bit earlier than you did, but none of us are exempt here at Baseball America from the handbook work, so I've had my head down reading, editing other people's chapters to get those ready to go in the book. So it's a choose your own adventure kind of thing. You know, either you're still working on your chapter or you're editing other people's, but one way or the other, it's an all hands on deck week here at BA, and that's the reason we're coming to you a little bit later this week than normal, but still wanted to get something squeezed in. And also because I've been editing the chapter so much, it's a nice rest for my eyes to not be staring intently at a Google Doc for hours on it. It's kind of nice to, you know, have a microphone on and be able to look around this room, which I'm doing right now, but you can't see. Looking at something other than a screen is kind of nice, at least for an hour or so.
Absolutely. The Prospect Handbook, if you're interested, can be pre-ordered at baseballamerica.com. It goes to press next week, so it'll be out, you know, the regular time it comes out, sometime later this winter before spring training, generally. Late January, early February, if you order from us over at baseballamerica.com. com. Also this week, part of the reason I was so late in getting my chapter done is I expanded the recruiting rankings to a 25, to a full 25, the 2022 recruiting class rankings. On signing day, we published a top 15, now expanded that to a full top 25. So if you are interested in that, if you enjoyed us talking about that the last time we talked about it, you know, about a month ago now, and want to dive in further on those teams 16 through 25, those are now available, full breakdowns over at baseballamerica.com. We've never had recruiting class rankings for, you know, run this deep this early. I've done top 10s and top 15s. I've even done a top 25, but never had full write-ups for all 25 teams. So that's a new thing this year, and you can check that out if you're into it. If you're curious, Tamar Johnson still has not committed to a college. So there might be another update to come if that does happen anytime. Here we will we'll certainly have to update the rankings to reflect that. Joe, did anything else happen? Oh yeah, and also this week in college sports news, Arkansas Little Rock is headed to the Ohio Valley Conference. Joe, did you see when that is supposed to happen? Is that a next year thing, 2 year thing?
Baseball wise, the 23 season will be there.
2023 season. All right, yeah. So that's a next this is their last the year cycle. Period in the Sun Belt. Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
I don't know that. I mean, obviously that doesn't move any specific needles, but the Ohio Valley Conference, I guess that's a signal that they're not going away. They've been hit pretty hard here in realignment with schools going to the ASUN and wherever else they're going, but they the clear sign they're adding Little Rock that they're going to keep going.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of needed numbers, not that they were at a dangerously low level like say the MEAC has been or even the Summit League at various points, but they had lost some teams. They needed some numbers. They get it with Arkansas Little Rock, which from a baseball standpoint is a, given the OVC, is a positive add. I think that's a program headed in the right direction. So I think that's a good thing there. I think the, you know, UT Arlington also, you know, you and I talked about this offline, you know, UT Arlington has kind of, with the reporting that's been done on conference realignment, has been reportedly maybe a little bit of mutual interest from the Missouri Valley Conference. It's clear the Sun Belt is prioritizing football. And so schools like Little Rock and UT Arlington don't really have a place in that. So I think that's what's driving this here. The conferences, we've also talked about this online, the conferences that feel like, you know, that are worth watching here too, from a baseball standpoint, are leagues like the Summit and the Horizon, because those, especially if Missouri Valley continues, or in the Ohio Valley, frankly.
So part of the reason that that's happening is there was a report from Matt Norlander of CBS Sports that Illinois-Chicago really wants in the Valley.
Correct.
The Missouri Valley, I should say.
Yes. So, you know, as long as the Missouri Valley continues to want to add, if the Ohio Valley continues to want to add, the Horizon and the Summit League are roughly in the footprint, and those leagues are at a level in baseball, a precarious level of teams. And so those are, I think, some conferences to watch in terms of that. I'll be interested to see, because baseball doesn't drive the bus on any of this, it ends up kind of being a secondary or tertiary concern for these conferences. How many baseball teams do we have? So is there outside of the box solutions that come from that, some sort of scheduling lines? I don't even know if that's possible, but just something worth watching as these conferences are trying to jockey for position and pull from whatever conference they deem to be one rung below them. And in a lot of cases in the Midwest, that ends up being those kinds of leagues.
Or, I don't know, the Summit League, last time it needed a team, it went out and added St. Thomas, Division III team. And like, that was obviously a very specific situation happening where St. Thomas got kicked out of its Division III league for being too good and too big for, like, it had just outgrown the league and its league mates were sick of it. So they moved up to Division I, and Joe wrote about that if you're curious, it, like, what is unprecedented. But that's an example, I suppose, of the outside the box thinking we've seen from the Summit League, which also, you know, recently, around the same time, I think, added Northern Colorado as a baseball only member.
Correct,
taking them from the WAC. And, you know, so again, Summit League engaging in some of that outside the box thinking Joe's talking about. I guess also noted in that report from Norlander, I'm just trying to remember this now, but there was something about if you know, how even Nebraska, Omaha could get involved in some of this stuff if expansion really were to break loose and the Summit Missouri Valley kind of deal. So yeah, the Summit League has been an area where they have been right on the edge of losing their auto bid before, and here we are talking about more Summit League teams possibly maneuvering. And so the outside the box thinking, Joe was a merger of the Horizon League and the Summit League for baseball. And you know, both leagues are operating very close to that minimum, so they're similar geography. Like I don't think it would be outlandish. Obviously, pulling it off is way easier for me to say than it is for them to do. But that might be something that they would need to think about.
I mean, there is like a minor precedent, but this year in FCS football, the A Sun and the WAC had something of a scheduling alliance. So the WAC was still the WAC, but the, you know, they I think they played crossover games with the A Sun. So you know, things like that have happened. Now I don't think anybody's, especially now that members of what they thought were going to be a growing WAC from a football standpoint are now moving on again to Conference USA. You know, that's clearly not a long-term solution there, but stuff like that has been done in other sports. So I imagine it's something that could be done if push comes to shove in baseball. Other thing with St. Thomas being up in the Summit League. Now I'm really kind of hopeful that on some level games of theirs, and they should be, because at this point in college baseball, just about everything is streamed. You know, I write about that every February, but one of the most unique, and this is one of the things I wrote about in that piece about them about a year and a half ago, they will have one of the more unique home parks in college baseball. So do some Googling at home. I don't want to, but it's just a interesting shaped. They share a, or have historically, maybe something has changed as they've moved up into Division I, but historically shared a field with the football practice field. And so the outfield has to accommodate a mostly full size, if not entirely full size, football practice field, which creates an interesting shape in a very deep center field. So if you got a little time,
it's like the polo grounds, yeah, or like super like, old Yankee Stadium, not like old Yankee Stadium that you remember from 1995, but like super old Yankee Stadium when the monuments were in center field.
Yeah, I mean it's like quite literally 460 feet or something like that to center field. So you know, I talked a little bit about, you know, their coaching staff about like, you know, how do you recruit to that? And like, it's been so long since I wrote it, I don't even want to paraphrase what he said, but you know, but that is an interesting recruiting challenge. You know, it's like, do you recruit crazy speed in center field, or do you just kind of say like, eh, nobody's really going to burn us to deep center field that deep, so let's just play it straight up and just hope that that happens just once or twice a year, not all the time. You know, it's just an interesting little challenge. But once you listen to this, dear listener, do some Googling and look for yourself. It is kind of a wild situation they have there for a program, by the way, that, as Teddy mentioned, you know, obviously football is the primary thing here, but St. Thomas solid in most sports, very good baseball program, very successful at Division III level. So whether or not they compete right away is another question. We saw kind of a mixed bag last year with the likes of Tarleton and Dixie State, which were only quote unquote coming up from D2. So that remains to be seen, but certainly the foundation is there for St. Thomas to be a little bit of a player at the Division I level. And because there are not a lot of other options, there's just the one with the University of Minnesota in terms of Division I opportunities. And a lot of players come out of Minneapolis and the upper Midwest. So there does seem like there is a little bit of a recruiting opportunity for St. Thomas to carve out some kind of niche for themselves.
It is one of the more interesting things to follow. Well, I shouldn't say that. It's one of the more hipster things to follow, this program coming up from Division III this year, starting the transition into Division I. So I have no doubt Joe will be following it, being the college baseball hipster that he is. And therefore, we'll probably be talking about them some more on the podcast too. So make sure you check out it. All you have to do is like go to their website and you can see the ridiculous center field situation. You don't have to work that hard for it. It's TommySports.com. TOMMIE sports.com. You'll see again, it's like polo grounds basically. If you have a visual of that, dear listener, and you know, it's not like I saw polo grounds, but I've seen the footage. Alrighty, so we're going to get into our discussion about rebound candidates here for the 2022 season here in a second. But first, check this out.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Why do I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America? Because it takes so much of the busy work out of hiring and does it for me. I can find highly qualified candidates in one place, set up interviews, and communicate with them, all on Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualification preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So you use Indeed. As you use it more, the better it gets. And listeners to this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
All right, Joe, we started this last year. I hesitate to say start this because we've done this twice now, but last year, probably out of necessity, when we were doing top 25s every week during the extended off season, one of them was bounce back candidates as teams. And you brought that back this year. I guess you had 10 candidates here. Teams that were down relative to themselves, I guess, in 2021, and looking at who might be in line for 2022 rebound. And since you put this together, I'm going to let you introduce it any further if there's nuance that I did not capture there.
No, thanks. No, I'm kidding. sure, I guess I'll do it. So last year, it was kind of born out of necessity last year because, I mean, we can say this now because we're far enough removed from it and we're not in the teeth of it. And I think the listeners will appreciate and understand this. Like, Teddy and I worked really hard to give you guys, and this is not me looking for sympathy or whatever else, it's just a statement of fact. We worked really hard to try to get you guys a new top 25 as often as possible last offseason. And some of them were easier than others. This idea, though, was a pretty good one last year as far as they go, just because it was kind of something tangible we could wrap our arms around a little bit, which I think we were kind of desperate to do last year. Like, ranking uniforms was fun, but ultimately that's just kind of like that was good for clicks, don't get me wrong, but like it didn't really have anything to do with the on-field product necessarily. So when we could do one last year that dealt with the on-field product and kind of focus us on that, we really kind of got excited about that. So this was one last year I thought that was interesting to put together. But going into this next season, wanted to do it again. The struggle with this one this year was, you know, I kind of went into it as like, maybe I'll put some players on here, because the top 25 last year was players and teams combined. And I kind of thought maybe I'll do that again. The trouble was with players, in order to be a bounce back candidate, there has to be something for you to, the implication is that you have been good at some point in the past and that the most recent version of what we saw was not as good. And so if that's the case, we're saying they weren't very good in 2021, but they were good before that. Well, unless we're going to go back to 2019, you know, the 2020 season, I don't think we can really count that. If a guy was hitting 500 through 12 games in 2020 and then, you know, struggled in 2021, I don't know that we can really have a leg to stand on that. So we just focused on teams, which I think there was a really good crop of them. This year, there were several, you know, major names and brands in college baseball that struggled in 2021 to varying degrees. So there was that. And I think also there were some teams that are on this list we'll talk about who probably were better than what they ended up showing, but just were snake bit, you know, whether it's injuries or COVID or, you know, in the case of Louisville, who will get to both. So I think there was just a lot working to make this a particularly robust list of teams that I think should be on the comeback trail in 2022. You know, we've kind of got them separated into a few different buckets because there's a few different reasons why one should believe in a little bit of a comeback. So looking forward to diving in on those, because I think, you know, talking a little bit about those buckets and why we have them on this list, I think is just as important as just the name itself, because it's important that we understand the context of what a bounce back means relative to each team.
Absolutely. Okay. So I guess the place that we'll start this are with Georgia. You have Georgia on this list. Georgia was, I mean, they weren't technically the first team out of the tournament. That was Baylor, but Georgia was nearly the, like, they were team 66 or something like that. And probably felt like when their season ended at the SEC tournament that they had done what they needed to get into the tournament, but they missed. Ultimately, though, they had an outstanding draft. Jonathan Cannon coming back, chief among it, but they keep a signing class together. They bring, you know, some of their top you know, draft eligible players opting to return to school. And I mean, they look like, I mean, we have them in the never too early top 25. They're, I'm sure, going to be in the official preseason top 25. They, I mean, are plausible contenders for the SEC East title. You know, Vanderbilt is the presumed favorite for that right now, but they're dealing with a lot of questions of their own. So Georgia feels to me, I mean, Joe technically doesn't have them labeled as an obvious choice, but to me, that is the most obvious of the choices.
Yeah, they were, you know, they are kind of an obvious choice just because they are maybe the best team on the board here. You can certainly make that argument. They are the only one currently ranked in our top 25. Will probably very well could be the only one ranked in the top 25, but there are a couple of others I suppose we could consider. But they are obvious from the standpoint of this is the team that feels like right now the most sure thing to be pretty doggone good next season. And the more they're kind of the team.
Did you do that on purpose?
Oh, doggone! I did not. But we'll pretend like I did, I guess. I wish I could be that quick on my feet with stuff like that, but alas, I cannot. But yeah, I mean, they're kind of like Baylor. We talked about a couple weeks ago. We're like, the more I read about them, the more I kind of buy in on it. And obviously we had them in the offseason top 25. And so I knew that we had high hopes for them, but if I'm honest, that was definitely the team where I think you probably pushed for them at the time. And I was kind of like, yeah, okay. You know, like, all right, sure. You know, cause when you get to a certain point after about 20, it's just like, especially in the offseason top 25, you're really just throwing darts. So I was like, all right, yeah. Okay. They were pretty good last year. And if you're telling me everybody's coming back or a lot of people are coming back, then I'll buy in on that. But the more I read on them, the more interested I am there. I mean, this is a team that the concern has almost always in recent years, anyway, been the position player group. And I actually really like the position player group this year. And then on the mound, their injury luck can't possibly be worse than what they had last year on the mound. I mean, last year with a healthy pitching staff, they probably, for the entire season, they probably get into the postseason. Didn't happen though. And this year they've got, you know, led by Jonathan Cannon, they've got, you know, really talented group. They lose a couple guys there, but I think the younger guys they have moving up into bigger roles are just as talented, perhaps, as the guys they have moving out there.
And a lot of those younger guys got innings because they had to get innings last year.
Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, I think it's just a really well-rounded team. Like, this is a legit good team on this list. And last year, again, context important, last year they were probably almost as good as what we're projecting them to be. They just ran into some bad luck. And that's why I talked about earlier that, you know, this team wasn't bad. It just, they had some bad luck and it led them to being a little bit disappointing relative to what we thought they might be capable of. You know, instead of having them in the obvious choices column, I had them in a bucket of teams that were close in 2021 that I think are kind of building towards something. I had them there with Kentucky. And a little bit different. I think the ceiling is not as high for Kentucky. I don't love, in terms of looking at the roster, that they did lose a handful of their best offensive players from last year. But I think they did a really good job in the portal, especially on the position player side. And that's a pitching staff that doesn't have like the hottest names in terms of prospect status or track record or anything like that. Although Ryan Higginau is a pretty good arm that a lot of people probably don't know about. I think that pitching staff is a lot better than people give the credit for. There were a handful of guys that could have left to start pro careers or just move on or what have you that decided to come back to Kentucky. So that's a big deal for them. I think the depth is good on the mound. So that's a Kentucky team that, you know, not altogether unlike Georgia, although for different reasons, was probably just a couple wins short of getting into the postseason last season.
I mean, it was even closer than that potentially. I mean, like, yes, that ultimately comes down to a couple wins here or there, but they were playing Florida in a series that, as I recall, ran Thursday to Saturday. They had won Thursday night and they were winning on Friday night late, like eighth, ninth inning. They think they get a strikeout to end the game. I guess this must have been in the ninth. Doesn't get called that way. And then Florida winds up coming back in that game, winning that game. And then they kind of rolled over Kentucky in the series finale to win the series, and things just kind of unraveled on the Cats after that. But you know, they beat Florida in that series, and you know, things are different for the Wildcats, and you know, that's really how close it was.
Yeah. I do remember that series actually pretty well. I think it was early May. I feel like, I mean, it was like the first week.
It wasn't like the last weekend of the season, but it was like after that Kentucky loss. Like, they needed to win. They had a really tough closing schedule. They needed to take one of the series against like Kentucky or against Florida, Vanderbilt. Maybe they played Tennessee late too.
Yeah, they did.
You know, they had it. They very nearly had the series that they needed in the bag, and they weren't able to close it. And then, like, Vanderbilt swept them on the last weekend, and they went to Hoover and lost on Tuesday, and that was kind of it for them. But if they get that win, you know, things probably go a little bit differently. And to your point, they have some nice pieces coming back. They have Ryan Ritter at shortstop, who, you know, depending on how much you like Ryan Ritter, I mean, is a potential like top 50 or higher pick. And like you said, they did some nice adding in the transfer portal to replace some of those key losses.
Yeah. I was looking at going back to Kentucky's schedule here, from last season. And it was just really like a white knuckle ride to try to like cross the finish line. They just couldn't quite get there. The really crushing blow in hindsight, I think, was they had a home series, you know, and it was right after that Florida series. So if you want to talk about just a swing in momentum, maybe that's what we're looking at here. But they had a home series that next weekend against South Carolina, and they got swept in that one. That was probably the most winnable series of the group. That was a period of time when, you know, South Carolina was kind of reeling, is maybe too strong a word, but there were definitely cracks in the foundation of South Carolina that we ended up seeing get worse as the season went on. So that was a real opportunity there, and they ended up getting swept in that one. And that's, you know, that's the one that Rob probably felt most gettable. And they weren't really all that, the scores just aren't that competitive in that series. They were clearly pretty flat there. So, but no, I think the 2022 team has a chance to kind of bounce back from that and get Kentucky back into a regional. You know, it's an interesting group. You never know how the transfer portal thing is going to work. This is an experiment for a lot of teams that are really trying to reboot on the fly. And Kentucky's going to give us a good, you know, a good test of that.
The good news about Kentucky going into the portal before we move on is that this is a program that has kind of consistently been into junior college players under Nick Mangione and before, but they've had success incorporating those kinds of players already. So now they're just doing it with, Ryan Ritter showed up after 1 year of junior college, as I recall. Now they'll have, instead of just 1 year of experience, they're bringing in a player with 2, 3, 4 years of experience. So I think that that's a place where, you can feel somewhat confident about their ability to do that kind of thing. Speaking of transfer portal, we've talked about this team a lot, but Texas A&M, very serious bounce back potential, starting with the fact that, look, they won, 9 SEC games last year. On some level, you just kind of expect that to be better as Jim Schlossnagel comes in and, gives the program just a new voice. Oftentimes you see a bump for new coaches and, maybe A&M can take advantage of that. And even if they couldn't, they brought in a ton of new players from the portal that are going to try and give the Aggies an infusion of new talent and, see them take a step forward.
Yeah, it's a, they're going to be, I've said this before, but they're going to be the toughest team to kind of place come when we really get down to brass tacks and try to figure out where to place teams in the pecking order. I think I'd probably have them as a regional team, just when you consider that, X number of SEC teams are going to be regional teams. And given what they added, I think they probably end up, as I look at it here, making the cut on that. But,
we'll get into this in the long run, but I will say no. Yeah. They're going to be right on the cut line, probably. Like, how many teams of the 14 can you jam into the field? They can't all go. This isn't softball, but
right.
We'll see. But I think that they are like right on the they'll be a bubbly team.
Right. And, you have to think of it from this standpoint, right? I mean, I don't mean to be disparaging, but they've added a lot of very talented players. But it's different playing in the SEC. Some of these guys, when you get right down, like Jack Moss could have played in the SEC, right? When he get in the transfer portal after he left Arizona State, there were several SEC teams interested in bringing him on, and many more probably would have been if they felt like they've maybe had a chance at him, or had the space for him. So, but a lot of these guys they've added are players that were not considered when they came out of high school to be SEC level players. And had they not been as veteran as they were, and had Texas A&M not had, glaring needs all over the field, probably wouldn't be playing in the SEC this year. And again, I don't mean that to be mean about it. It's just kind of the reality that they're trying to reboot this thing on the fly with a lot of pieces from a lot of different places. And so I think it's entirely possible it works, meaning they've got like a really solid team and they've plugged a lot of holes all over the field. But does that add up to it being a team that's better than 500 in the SEC? And now 500 in the SEC gets you in pretty comfortably into the field. So, but it being anything better than that, I feel like would almost be a little bit of icing on the cake. That being said, I think we both are pretty bullish on Jim Schlossnagel in that role more long-term. I think this year is going to be an interesting just kind of one-off situation. Some of these transfers they brought in are younger. I think, Jack Moss being chief among them, but there are also guys who are older and will be moving out after 1 year. And I do think we will also see a pretty big overhaul in the roster again after next season, just as they continue to try to turn that over and get that going. But just, from the standpoint of A&M, even if you run it back with the same team next year, I think there's a pretty entirely likely scenario they win several more games than 9, are much closer to the bubble than not, even if you just had the same roster, because it's kind of just been the history there. So you start from that as a baseline. I think next year's team has a chance to be quite a bit better. They will probably at least be on the bubble like we've talked about, but just an obvious candidate from the standpoint of, hey, this is a program that doesn't typically finish that low in the SEC standings. And also, this is a coaching staff that clearly has gone about working hard to make sure the product in the field in 2022 is significantly better right out of the chute.
All right. So the other obvious choice you had was Louisville. And I don't really want to spend hardly any time on Louisville because I think it's pretty obvious. Louisville's a team that makes the College World Series pretty consistently, like certainly competes ACC titles pretty consistently, and spent a whole lot of time last year looking like it was going to compete for an ACC title until the injuries finally caught up with it. Now, the reason, I guess, the devil's advocate to Louisville as a bounce back team is that Henry Davis was the number one overall pick and they still missed the tournament. And now they have to replace Henry Davis among others, but chief among them, Henry Davis. So if you're going to question Louisville, I think it starts with the fact that the heart of their order, Davis and Benelis, moved on to pro ball, and now they're going to have to find answers for that and, just stay healthier on the map.
Yeah, they were just a weird team last year. It's the kind of season that, if this were college football, whatever the college football equivalent of this would be getting a lot of attention. It's just like a weird case study, but because it's college baseball, flew under the radar, but just a weird year when you consider that, like, all of the following things were true. Like, they had just horrible luck with injuries and COVID, and it was kind of not clear at various points, like, which things were injuries, which things were COVID going on there. But they would just, like, week to week, you and I were scrambling to try to figure out, like, who does Louisville even have this weekend? And so that was going on. At the same time, to your point, they really entered May.
They're like, totally fine going into May.
Yeah, like going into May, it was like this team. Now, part of it was because, like, the ACC outside of Notre Dame, especially as we entered May, we know what we know now about NC State. But at that time, we were still like, hey, here comes NC State, but how good are they really? Outside of Notre Dame, the ACC was just very blah for much of last year. And so it was like, well, Louisville might be the second best team in the ACC. And it was just a complete collapse down the stretch. And still, furthermore, had it been a regular schedule as opposed to the ACC doing 36, at least on paper, conference games, Louisville only got 32. But had it not been that, and not just Louisville, but other teams around the conference had an opportunity to, maybe to use a phrase that Mike Rooney likes, cross-pollinate their RPI a little bit, like, Louisville might have gotten in with a similar resume than what they had. The RPI just tanked. And in a lot of ways, because they were only playing ACC clubs for the most part. They also took a loss to Western Illinois during the season. So don't do that.
They also had a ton of top 50 wins. It was the strangest resume you could have put together.
Oh yeah. It's like a perfect storm of like stuff. That's like, what does this amount to? And what it amounted to was them missing out on the tournament. And that kind of felt, obviously there are real things at stake here. Those players didn't get to, play in the postseason, all that kind of stuff. But like, it felt fitting in a way that they didn't make the postseason, because it just really felt like a struggle last year for Louisville. Just like everything, even when they were really, quote unquote cooking, it really just felt like everything was super hard for them last year. So it did feel a little bit fitting that they just fell a little bit short. Now, what I will say, they are obvious because the history here suggests that not only will they be back, but they'll be back to being one of the best teams in the ACC. But I do think there is a pretty wide range of outcomes between what I think is probably the floor here, which is a solid team back in a regional, probably is like a two, like I'd compare it to, I forget if it was 17 or 18, that I guess it was 18, that Louisville was in like the Lubbock regional as a two, and they were a good team, but we knew they really weren't going to go to Lubbock and win that regional. Like, that feels like kind of the floor for this team. The ceiling, of course, is much higher. But they do have a decent number of questions. One of the reasons why they struggled to the extent they did last year was, they tried some things in the mound, Michael Kurian in the rotation, et cetera, that just didn't quite work. Jack Perkins wasn't what we thought he was going to be. And so now they're leaning pretty hard on a relatively unproven group of guys. Michael Prosecki is going to be a really important guy out there. For example, Jared Poland bouncing back feels like that's going to be pretty important for this team, but it's a largely unproven group there. And in the lineup, you mentioned some of Henry Davis being gone, Alex Benelis being gone. Levi Usher having a good year feels pretty important there, but you're also really buying in on guys like Dalton Rushing and Ben Metzinger and You know, guys like that who have kind of been around and have had productive moments, but haven't had their star turn yet at Louisville. And this is what Louisville does, right? We talk about this all the time. Guys who have been productive players, who have been role players, who've had flashes 2 or 3 years in the program, then kind of turn into stars, turn into some of the best players in the ACC. So that's what they're looking to have happen this year. But it feels to me a little like they're looking for that to happen in a lot of different places. And I don't know that I feel comfortable betting against that happening, but I'm willing to at least acknowledge that that's a lot of if there for this team to reach its absolute ceiling. A lot of players are going to have to make big jumps. It's possible, but we need to also understand that that is also asking a lot of that team.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you're not looking at a College World Series contender. I mean, they're not in the never too early top 25. I'd be surprised if they went into the preseason top 25, but you know, we'll just have to see what they've got. But it's clear to see why they would bounce back. But I mean, you also do have to remember that, I mean, this is a team that swept North Carolina State, won a series against UVA and split with Notre Dame. And I mean, obviously if you talk to anybody at Louisville, they would probably tell you that they feel like they could have gone out and won that series against Notre Dame had they played on Sunday. You know, those are, I mean, two College World Series teams and a team in Notre Dame that won the ACC and fell one game short of the College World Series themselves. So yeah, they have to replace some pieces, but at their best last year, Louisville was flying high. So if the Cards can get back to that, they should be able to make last year into a weird COVID year blip.
Well, now before we move on quickly, I know you're about to move on, but you know, we should have devoted an off-season episode like several months ago to really just revisiting how meh the ACC was last year. Like, my goodness.
Like, there was a time I meant to do something like that, and it fell through the cracks.
Yeah, I mean, I think it speaks to our ability to kind of create content here that we haven't really had to rehash much from last year to create content, but that was something that we probably should have done. But my goodness, what a mess. I mean, and some of it was the schedule, but I think in general, it was just a very blah year that put out some great things, right? I mean, Notre Dame, NC State, for, you know, Virginia end up doing what they do, but boy, it was a circuitous route.
Indeed, it was. I'm just going to mention here another ACC school you had in the original post, which was Wake Forest. They really struggled with, they were hit as hard by COVID as probably anyone in the country, really, and never really recovered. They went through a whole bunch of changes this offseason, and we'll probably get into Wake Forest. This little tease for you a little more here on a future episode of the Baseball America College podcast. So I'm going to just mention Wake Forest, and we're going to move on to another team that we already talked about here on the podcast this offseason. That's Cal State Fullerton. We had new head coach Jason Dietrich on. Things obviously have not gone particularly well for Fullerton over the last few years. That said, they are still one of the Big West, real powerhouses. They've got talent. There is reason to believe that they should be better than they are. And now, again, like I said, with Jim Schlossnagel at A&M, you get a bit of a new coach bump. And, you know, all of a sudden Fullerton, you know, while I don't think they're going to be ready to compete with, you know, UCSB or Long Beach State this year, or Irvine at the top of the conference, but I mean, they certainly should be able to get back to a place that they're much more used to being. And hey, I mean, if everything breaks right, maybe they can compete for a conference title.
Yeah, this is a classic case of, like, things can't really be worse at Fullerton, right? I mean, I have to assume that you would know better than I, because you do the recruiting stuff. I have to assume, like, maybe at this point they're getting out recruited by, you know, Irvine or Santa Barbara or, you know, Cal Poly, even if you take Brooks Lee out of the equation. But
I mean, like, I'll give the Chos the best recruiting out there right now. Everyone else, like, I wouldn't necessarily say is definitely better than Fullerton, but Beach is probably up there. Poly has really good moments. Like, it's not just Brooks Lee that's happening there, but I don't think it's happening as consistently. And the Irvine thing is a little too new for me to have gotten my arms wrapped around it. I mean, they have a lot of really good players. So at least very recently, I think they've probably out-recruited Fullerton, but I mean, that's not a historical reality.
Yeah, so I mean, I say all that to say, like, they're still recruiting right there with the teams that they would need to recruit with. And, you know, and I understand the history of Fullerton is such that the diehards at Fullerton, of which there are some, which is not altogether common on the West Coast, but college baseball diehards, Fullerton has them. They would like them to be recruiting with the SEC, right? That's not a reality at this point, but, you know, within the Big West, they are still,
I mean, like, I think they wouldn't even, like, they might say, like, oh, okay, we can't do that. But, like, can we at least recruit, like, USC or right. UCLA? And, right. like, I mean, they're a long ways off from doing that, too.
Sure. But they're still as talented as really, in terms of recruiting, they're still getting as much talent in the conference as most anyone, except for maybe, you know, one or two teams at this point. And yet, you know, they finished ninth last year in the Big West. I think it was ninth. That's just shockingly bad. Like, it just can't possibly be worse. So I think that team's going to improve just by virtue of, like, again, like I said, with A&M, if you run it back with the same guys, I don't know if it's that bad. But so I do think there is, like, maybe just the benefit of a new voice in the dugout. Obviously, Jason Dietrich has had success at Fullerton as an assistant. You know, the best years that Fullerton had under Rick Vanderhook were really those years when Dietrich was there as the pitching coach. So they are taking a bet that that is not a coincidence there. They also are kind of, I think it's poetic, maybe is maybe the right way to put it, that they are really starting over. And the group of players who just left were kind of among the last, you know, groups of players that there was a lot of buzz about coming into Fullerton, and it just never quite came together. So while he was productive, you know, Tanner Bibee ends up, you know, moving on to pro baseball, but, you know, Cameron Guangarena, who was a big name catcher out of the California prep ranks, you know, he transferred to Coastal Carolina. You know, Michael Knorr in the rotation, Kyle Luckum in the rotation, with Luckum's going to Arizona State, like, talented guys who a lot was expected of, and for them individually and for the team, it just never quite came together. So I do think there is, I mean, this is a pretty hard reset here for Fullerton. So I want to temper expectations here, because I do think expecting a switch to just kind of get flipped here would be foolhardy. I think this is going to be a little bit of a process for Fullerton. But that being said, I do think improvement probably comes in 2022, you know, if for no other reason, because it can't get worse, but also just because I do think there is something to, like, it was just kind of time to turn things over a little bit at Fullerton and maybe get a little bit of a fresh start.
Yeah, that one is maybe the most interesting one to watch here on the whole list for me. Touch on another West Coast one here briefly, that is Washington. I think, you've grouped them together. They, that was probably the bottom, right? Wasn't it? UW does not have a new coach coming in, you know, to breathe the, you know, to get that new coach bump. Lindsey Meggs remains there. But, I mean, UW recruits well. They have a good coaching staff and Lindsey Meggs and Elliot Cribby and the rest of them out there. They've got the pieces in place. I just think last year that has to have been a one-off. This is too good of a program to stay down like they were last year for me.
Totally agree. This is a team that I don't particularly understand exactly what happened last year. I can tell you, if I look at the stat sheet, what happened. That's just, like, the offense outside of Will Simpson wasn't very good. Period. And Washington never has the most physically imposing offense, but they do typically have, if you go back to their College World Series team, they had, you know, a couple, you know, Nick Cale had a really nice year and the big DH.
Who's the DH? Yeah.
Yeah. Just Joe Wainhouse. You know, he was one of the hottest hitters on the West Coast the second half of that College World Series year. By the time he got to Omaha, it was something crazy. Like, he had like 13 home runs in his previous 18 games or something. You know, so they always kind of have a couple of guys the lineup revolves around, and they've got a couple of other guys who do a couple things really well, and they piece it together offensively. But kind of felt like last year the bottom really fell out on the offense, and the pitching was solid but wasn't really good enough to make up for the lack of offense. And so I can tell you that happened, but beyond that I don't really know. I mean, at one point they lost 10 conference games in a row, and that's just, you know, Washington should not be at the bottom of the state, you know, should not be down at the bottom of the standings with Utah. Like, that's just an incongruent situation there. They continue to recruit well, as you noted. So I think there's hope there. Also, it's a team that, you would struggle to imagine a scenario where they're worse next year. One thing that's interesting about the Pac-12, though, that I think does make this a little bit more complicated for UW, is that there was a time where you kind of would assume in the Pac-12, like, okay, they're better than this team, they're better than that team. And that might still be the case with, say, Utah. But a couple of the programs that, you know, if you go back 3 or 4 years ago, were really kind of struggling, have seemed to have gotten it together. Oregon, obviously, chief among them. But even Washington State under Brian Green is really moving in the right direction. You may remember last year, at least a fleeting moment, where it looked like Wazoo might get into the at-large discussion. Didn't play out that way, but that was clearly a better team.
There was a path in May for Wazoo.
For sure.
It was a really hard path, but it was there. They had created that for themselves.
So, like, you know, UW's path to just be better in the Pac-12 and move up a few slots is not as easy as it was a few years ago. So I say a lot to say they could be better last year, but the path has gotten a little more difficult in the Pac-12. It's not as top-heavy a league, but I do think the middle has really firmed up there.
Yes, I would agree with that. But having said all of that, this is a league without any sort of defined, like nobody is winning 25 in the pack this year, we don't think. You know, something that happens with relative frequency that the league gets one with 23, 24 plus wins. I don't see a team like that this year. We like Stanford, certainly, and maybe they put it together like that. But it seems much more like the whole league is going to be operating closer to 500. And so at that point, just a few breaks and you're where you need to be. All right. We'll hit on a couple more here before we get out of here. I think the most interesting, you know, kind of similar teams here, you know, you're just kind of the programs are really good. The conferences usually help them, you know, get into the tournament picture. Indiana, Coastal Carolina, both missed the tournament last year. Obviously, those are two programs that are used to making regionals, and we think can certainly get back to that. But for me, Joe, the more interesting team that you mentioned here that I want to spend a little bit of time on is UCF. And wow, okay, so you look at the roller coaster ride that was UCF over the last couple of years. In 2020, they were off to a sensational start. Of course, season gets canceled. Expected UCF to be very good again in 2021. It just never really came together for the Knights. They were more fine, you know, kind of just middle of the pack American team, and ends up being USF that goes to the postseason, not UCF. And now you look at it again, and you know, again, there's you look at it, you see talent, you see some expectation, but you know, okay, so which is it going to be this year? And I mean, that's one that I'm interested in digging into more over the next month.
Yeah, so just a peek behind the curtain for listeners, I have a Google Doc I put together to kind of classify these teams and put them in buckets. So, like, you know, I put the obvious choices bucket, and then I put the it can't possibly be worse bucket. I put the, like, betting on tradition and conference affiliation bucket. And then for this one, it's UCF by itself, and it just says, I don't know, man. Because it's a talented team. We obviously like them a lot coming into last year. We like the...
We had them ranked in the preseason, didn't we?
We did, yeah. Yeah, we certainly did. Like... And then we took them immediately out, and then they won that series against Ole Miss. Like, just...
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, the roller coaster ride was there were more ups and downs than I like maybe led it to believe. But yeah, they lost to FAU on opening weekend, and then they go to Swayze and win a series.
Yeah, just bonkers. I mean, and it's amazing too for all
against
the
ups newly crowned number one Ole Miss at the time. It's like this just happened last night. Like Rutgers going and knocking Purdue. Ole Miss had never been number one in the Baseball America Top 25. They win that. They sweep through that series in Arlington last year in opening weekend, move up to number one. They get to enjoy that for all of a week because then they lose at home to UCF. Much like you know, Purdue finally in men's basketball becomes number one for the first time ever in program history. They enjoy it for all of a week before Rutgers upsets them on a buzzer beating shot in Jersey Mike's arena center plaza. I don't know what they call it there.
Rest in peace to the rack. That is a tragedy that they no longer call it the rack. They actually got a sponsorship.
I don't know. Jersey Mike's is pretty good.
Get that money. You know what I mean? Like on the naming rights. But at the same time, secure the bag, but also understand that by not calling it the rack anymore at Rutgers, you're being disrespectful to history. As one of the places, even when Rutgers was terrible in men's basketball, that was always a tough place to play. Like, that was one of the things you always heard is like, a tough place to play, the rack. And you're always kind of like, well, why don't they win more? Anyway, as an aside there. But yeah, so it's also kind of amazing that for all of the roller coaster ride that UCF was last season, they ended up pretty much exactly 500, which seems kind of hard to do.
It also felt right.
Yeah, exactly. It really did. So, I mean, this really kind of feels like a shrug of the shoulders and a like, let's just run this back and try this again. Now
I will say, not to cut you off here, Joe, that,
yep.
Okay, so last year the American went to 4-game weekends. Not everyone is built for that. And I'm not saying that UCF was less built for that than Wichita or somebody, but look, that's not the way anybody plans to play a college baseball season anymore. So just getting back to more normalcy with 3-game series, with midweek games against in-state competition that can be, you know, very advantageous to their RPI. I mean, just doing that, you would think, would be beneficial to this team getting back into regionals.
And look, I mean, we're bought in on the program trajectory in general, led by Greg Lovelady, and we like the team enough. Like, it just, UCF seems like, except last year, obviously, that they're always in the bubble. They're always right there. Like, this team has to get to a regional eventually. Like, it just has to happen again. Like, there's not a glaring deficiency here, I don't think, that we can pinpoint that has kept them out. We can probably nitpick some things, but whatever, you know? So yeah, I mean, they're an interesting one, to see how that plays out. And I think an American, at least before the realignment shakes out, I think the American could be a pretty strong, this coming season, and maybe provide a little more parity and a little more opportunity for solid wins inside the conference than last year, where it was like, if you don't get East Carolina, you might not get an opportunity to add something to your resume in conference. So perhaps that'll change in 2022. Very quickly here before we move on from this, if I give you, so there were some teams that I put on this doc that were like not included in the original piece, but are worth mentioning. Some are like super hipster, like off the radar stuff, like
Lamar. Shouts to Lamar.
Yeah, Lamar. Like if Lamar was going to be in the Southland, like that might be a conference title contender. Like, it's a veteran offense. Every coach I talked to in the Southland the last couple of years, because Lamar has not been very good, every coach looks at it and goes, that team, they won't be bad again. Like, they're gonna get it figured out. That team is too talented. I think people like Will Davis, like, you know, there was a lot of optimism about him. It just hasn't happened. And I think this year could be a year, though. They've got a guy named Josh Eknis on the mound who there's a lot of buzz about, like, guy who gets up to triple digits on his fastball. Like I said, it's a veteran offense. So they've got some real guys there. The thing about it is they lost a pitcher to Texas. They lost a pitcher to Oklahoma. And they lost a pitcher to West Virginia on their staff. Like, I shudder to think how good they might have been, you know, shudder for the sake of their opponents, how good they might have been had those guys stuck around. Like, that's kind of nuts. But anyway, moral of the story is there. I mean, there's some pretty hipster stuff there. Lamar, I think maybe Houston, that's not quite hipster, but they kind of fall into the category of like, it can't be worse. They added Kyle Bunn as a pitching coach, and he's not like the hottest name in pitching coaches, but wherever he goes, they pitch pretty well. He does a good job. Middle Tennessee State is where he was.
I guarantee they're going to throw way more strikes at Houston than they did last year.
Yes, he definitely comes from like the, and I'm not drawing a link between these two people necessarily, but just in terms of stylistically, like, he's kind of from the Frank Anderson school of like, just throw strikes and like, let's start with that. Middle Tennessee State pitched pretty well with him at the helm. So at Houston, I think he's got an opportunity to affect some positive change there. So I think Houston will be improved. But anyway, I say all that to say, that's a long preamble. If I give you these two teams, tell me which one you would bet on more in terms of a bounce back, Auburn or Clemson?
Oh boy. I mean, let's just cut right to the heart of the matter here. Like, not even give me like, well, like maybe West Virginia. Like, I could talk myself into West Virginia, right? Like, the Big 12 is a little more open. Like, no, let's go right to the heart of it.
West Virginia, also on the sheet for those scoring at home.
My feeling on Auburn is that last year has to have been the bottom. Like, they fit into that kind of category, that they had terrible injury luck. They started the season well, and it fizzled at some point. You look at guys like Mason Barnett on the mound, You know, some of the hitters they have coming back, like, it's got to be better. That said, they play in the SEC West. And if you're going to go up, who's coming down to you? And like, okay, like maybe Alabama, like if you're a little, if you're on the tide, then I probably am. And maybe don't think A&M's going to come up, but like still, it's a really hard division to be in. ACC feels more open. But you know, and if you're Clemson, you're looking at Caden Grice and saying like, I mean, like he could be the best player in the conference. Like that's certainly within the range of possibilities for Caden Grice. And, you know, we've got some exciting talent on the mound. Like maybe things can get put together. I mean, I guess ultimately that is my answer is Clemson, just because I don't want to pick a team in the SEC West to make a rebound when you're looking at the reigning national champs, Ole Miss bringing back the whole offense, LSU looking like the offensive juggernaut they'll be, and you know, Arkansas still being Arkansas. Like, I don't want to say that, you know, anyone in the SEC West outside of those four teams is going to make a move. So I guess it's got to be Clemson, but you know, Clemson wasn't that great last year. They missed the tournament for a reason. They weren't truly on the bubble at the end. But I guess I got to go Clemson.
I think I'm with you for all the reasons you stated. You know, important when you're having a discussion like this, because it's one thing on talent, right? If we did it on talent, I think, you know, maybe you look at Auburn and you can really do like a side by side. But then when you really have to dig in and determine, okay, what do we mean by this? Like getting back to a regional, certainly the path I think for Clemson is
and
more
I think
amenable.
For, like so bounce back means something different for every team on this list, but I think in this case they are basically looking to do the same thing. These are consistent regional teams that missed last year and are trying to get back.
Correct. Yeah, it's a good point. So these two teams really are interesting because I think you're right. They are very similar in terms of their goals for 2022, what they're looking to get back to, what happened in 2021, although the bottom fell out a little more at Auburn, but you might just blame that on the SEC versus the ACC. I did take a quick peek at Auburn's schedule for 2022, and I have bad news for their bounce back hopes. They in the East, the crossover series, they miss Missouri. So that's not ideal. Also two potentially winnable series among their series. They do get Alabama at home. That's helpful. But Kentucky is on the road and Texas A&M is on the road. And those are two teams that if you're going to be fighting to get back onto the right side of the bubble or better, those are, you know, A&M and Kentucky are kind of the teams you're probably going to be battling it out with. And those two series are both on the road. So not necessarily the best case scenario there for Auburn in terms of the schedule. So that just adds another layer of complication to it.
Now, all that said, I really like Butch Thompson, and he has exceeded expectations in just about every season he's been at Auburn. Last year, obviously, the exception, but and you can argue the first year, but I would say, like, look, he got hired in October. Like, what do you want from the guy? Just about every other year, they've been better. They've gone further than anyone expected. So, you know, you do have that working for you. If you're looking to make a bounce back, like you have a guy who's leading your program who has proven that, you know, he can get a team to exceed expectations. So if you're making the case for Auburn, I think that's an important part of it. And I think they have some very talented pitching that I would be excited about as well.
Interesting to watch quickly on Auburn too, the importing over Samford's offense, essentially, you know, so yes. Need to share Brooks Carlson. Those guys were both very, very good at Samford. I think they'll still be productive. A big key will be, are they SEC, you know, solid SEC level productive, or are they just, you know, kind of, you know, something less than that. And that's, I think that feels like a key for them.
Absolutely. Well, that was fun looking into some of these teams. If you want to get, if you want a little more written content on these teams, if listening to me and Joe talking about them wasn't enough for you, you can find the full story over at baseballamerica.com, where again you can pre-order your prospect handbook. We're sending it to press in a week, and It'll be out sometime in a couple months. Never can get an exact date as to when that'll start shipping, but late January, early February is generally a pretty good bet on that. So look for that then. And if you're interested, make sure you pre-order so you can get it as soon as it starts shipping out of the warehouse. We will be back here with another edition of the Baseball America College Podcast next week. So make sure you are following the Baseball America feed on your favorite podcasting app, be that Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, anywhere you get your podcasts, you can find us there. Joe and I are on Twitter. I'm at Ted Cahill. Joe is at Joe Healy BA. If you're interested in whatever we're tweeting out these days, it's December. I'll admit it's a little light, but check us out on Twitter as well. Thank you to Rap Soto for presenting this and every edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. Thank you all for listening here in December. Like I mentioned, I mean, we'll be cranking up to preseason very soon, but this is probably as deep in the off season as you really can get with all the competing things for your time these days. But maybe you're going to the mall and checking us out. So while you're doing some last minute shopping. So we appreciate you spending some time with us here on the Baseball America College Podcast. For Joe, I'm Teddy. We'll talk to you next time.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at Menards.